Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today we have a guest who is the Principal Architect and Cybersecurity Operations Lead at AT&T, named Jason Lawrence. Jason, welcome today. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Chris, for having me.
Now, we always know that people that have your background have a lot to say, and we're going to try and pick your brain over the next half hour here and see what we can pry out of there. But first of all, you know, give us a little bit about yourself. What's your personality? How you got to where you're at? What do you like to do? What do you do on the weekends? What's Jason like?
Well, I enjoy what I do for a living. I also enjoy doing it outside of work. I enjoy the cyber defense side of things. That's where I focus my effort. Occasionally, I mentor for the SANS Institute. Occasionally, I am an active participant in the local ISSA chapter, and I'm a past president of the local HTCIA chapter. I think that it's important for us as cybersecurity professionals to give back to our communities, give back to the people that that rely on us. And I think it's important for us to be more open to sharing our new ideas and understanding that some people may have different perspectives and have an opportunity to listen to them and learn from other ideas. So sharing ideas is one of the things that I try to do as much as I possibly can. And also learn from other people, learn from their mistakes, their trials and tribulations, as well as my own. What do I do on the weekend? Sometimes I reverse engineer malware. Sometimes I do forensics. Sometimes I just spend time with my wife and kids and dog. And
so there's no skydiving in that picture?
When I was much younger, I served in the Israeli military, and I had an opportunity there, but I'm past the age of where I'm about to jump out of a perfectly good plane unless I have to.
Yeah. So where are you at right now, location-wise?
On the internet.
Obvious. Are you not allowed to tell me a physical location?
I'm in the greater Atlanta area.
Okay, Atlanta, in the United States. You said Israel. I was like, are you overseas right now? Was kind of what went through my mind. And I hadn't asked before we started.
No, I lived in Israel for a number of decades. Grew up there and served my required service in the Israeli military.
So. Yeah. So I know there's a lot of innovation over there. A lot of good training comes from the Israeli military. How do you feel that has helped you through your career?
When I was in the military, computers were not as ubiquitous as they are now. The 80s was a bit different time. I think that the innovations that are coming out of Israel are groundbreaking in many cases. I just read this evening that Cellebrite, an Israeli company that focuses on phone forensics, just acquired Blackbag, who focused on Mac forensics, which was very interesting to me that they're expanding. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, Cellebrite were involved in the decryption of an iPhone that was from the terror attack in California a few years back. They decrypt the iPhone.
Well, that was the FBI Apple controversy they support.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if I recall correctly. So.
Interesting.
They do interesting stuff. And the companies coming out of Israel, I've known a number of them. One of the best store products that are now on the market, Demesto, they were acquired by Palo Alto Networks a couple of years ago. They're also leader in the market in the SOAR industry, very innovative. So I've seen some really good innovations coming out of Israel. And I think that that can help all of us be better if we look at them as a leader from that perspective.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break here from our sponsors. After we come back, I Googled when you told me the High Technology Crime Investigation Society. I want to talk about your involvement there and what exactly that is. I've never had anybody explain that or talk about that on the show. Be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, we are talking with Jason Lawrence, who is a principal architect at AT&T. But I think we had to say that he's representing himself here. He's not speaking for AT&T, and you can further elaborate on that if you want, Jason. But before the break, you had mentioned that you were involved with the HTCIA, which is High Technology Crime Investigation Association. For our listeners that might not be familiar with that, its mission and what you do, can you give us a kind of a rundown?
So the HTCIA came out of law enforcement initially, some 20 some odd years ago, where law enforcement officers that dealt with digital evidence, initially it was starting with video surveillance and things of that nature, but it transformed into other digital evidence, came together and wanted to share their ideas and share their perspectives and their findings. So they created this association of law enforcement agents that they started at least 15 or so years ago to involve civilians as well in the conversations. There are some strict stipulations in order to become a member of the association. And one of the things that is one of the stricter stipulations there is one of the bylaws is you cannot do defense work and criminal defense work, not DOD defense work, and also be a member. That's one of their stipulations because it's focused on helping people who deal in law enforcement predominantly to be better at doing digital investigations.
So they don't want both sides of the cat and mouse game in the same room is what you're saying?
That's the mindset, yeah. They do a lot of good things. They've also transitioned into more holistic cybersecurity, not just doing digital forensics type of it's a really good association. A lot of good folks from law enforcement background. I have a lot of friends from that, from those industries. And I think that's important for anyone who can be a member of the HTCIA to interact with law enforcement and get a good perspective on what they have to deal with, what their day-to-day looks like, and also develop those relationships and network with law enforcement is always helpful in our role because you never know what you're going to come across on a day in the cyber defender world. I've leveraged law enforcement in previous roles because it's very helpful to have those connections and understand where they're coming from. And there are some very good people that are in law enforcement that, well, I would call them friends. And you hear some war stories that you wouldn't hear elsewhere. And that's also very, very beneficial. So I would highly recommend being a member of HTCIA. They have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I'm looking through their chapters. I see quite a few lists. They're all over the world, not all over the U.S. though. Not in specific areas, but not everywhere. And I guess a couple countries around the world. So interesting. So I have never really looked into this before. That's why I was like, "What is that?" I guess, you know, check out their site, htcia.org. Anybody that has never heard of it, and just become familiar with it, I guess. It's definitely, if you're not in the law enforcement or cyber forensics, is there a certification they offer or anything that people would be familiar with? Or
no, I don't think they offer any certifications. As far as I recall, they don't offer any certifications, but their CPEs are relevant for or attending their chapter meetings. They also have an annual conference.
Yeah, I see that in Phoenix September 27th through 30. So they're booking pretty well ahead of time. They're definitely planning out, and they have all the speakers lined up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 2020 is already booked. Deadline for submission February 21st, huh? Well, I guess that's for speakers. Call for presentations. Now, what are they looking for? They're looking for tools and techniques, case law, high-tech investigation, RAM analysis, cyber terrorism, dark web, computer forensics, digital video and audio forensics, network forensics, cryptography, mobile device e-discovery, vehicular forensics, and other topics, drones, internet, things that are listed. But, yeah, still looking for speakers. But, interesting.
Yeah. So if any one of your listeners are interested in presenting, I would recommend checking them out. They have some good conferences, good people, like I said, and helping law enforcement do their job better is always a good value proposition for all of us, I think. And again, as I mentioned before, I enjoy forensics and doing the defensive side of cyber very much. And that was a good opportunity to interact with people who do it on a day-to-day basis more than most of us will ever do.
Interesting. Yeah. So, and with your background, I guess we had talked before the show about, you know, what can the industry do better? What do we need? And your ideas on that from somebody who has a visibility in such a big footprint organization, what do you see as, you know, things we can improve on that you would want everybody to know about?
Well, I think that one thing that we need to focus on is leveraging what we already have and leveraging our people. I think that one of the biggest missteps that I've seen, and my day job is mostly consulting, so I'm a consultant as a principal architect, and I see many organizations. And one thing that I see is there's a lot of technology investment, but that technology investment is not leveraged adequately. Organizations pay a lot of money to have good operating systems, modern operating systems. And if you're not on Windows 10, Windows 7 died yesterday, so you better upgrade. I don't see that these investments are leveraged as a defensive tool. And I think that companies can do a lot better at leveraging what they already have invested in to improve their defenses. I think that another observation that I've had is that many organizations have a shiny box syndrome, where there's a new shiny box that comes out that promises that they'll solve all their security problems, and companies buy into that. And what typically happens is you have a ton of new technologies in the environment that aren't fully leveraged. I think that we can do better. Instead of in buying new technologies at every turn, let's first assess if we're leveraging all the technologies that we've already invested in to defend our organization. Threat landscape is changing, and if we don't understand our technologies well enough, adversaries will leverage that against us. So having a good understanding and having our technologies leveraged in such a way where they're used to defend the environment is probably the best thing that we can do for our companies, for our organizations, for our networks, and for our users and customers. I think that's where we need to focus our effort. A good stat that's come out from, I think that TrustWave and IBM and Verizon and a whole bunch of others have come up with a stat that says that on average, the dwell time of an adversary in the network, an attacker in the network, is about around 100 or 101 days. I'm confident that we could do better. I'm confident that if we leverage the technologies that we've already invested in, instead of getting distracted by new technologies, first leverage what we have, we could probably be better and do better at detection and response to those adversaries. Another thing is, security is not about being perfect. And I think that if we invest a lot of time in trying to be perfect, we miss the bigger picture. If we try to be better than we were yesterday and leverage what we can in order to defend against new attacks that will come our way, and understand our environments better.
Let's take a break and hear from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Jason Lawrence, the principal architect and cybersecurity operations lead for AT&T, and giving us some of his own personal advice, not speaking for AT&T, as we precursed before as well. But Jason, before the break, we were talking about not unused tools or capabilities that companies buy, the shiny box syndrome. And you were elaborating on how and ways to use what we have to make it better instead of going after the next shiny box. So recommendations on that. What would you recommend when you go in to consult for your clients?
Well, first and foremost, I recommend looking at what's already deployed, seeing, are we leveraging it to detect more holistically what's going on in our environment? Having a more complete visibility into our environment enables us to detect and respond to our adversaries, to our attackers, more expeditiously and more accurately. And having high confidence that our detections are correct and that we're responding to actual attacks rather than noise is a goal that we need to strive towards. I think that another thing that we need to think about is the adversaries that we're facing inevitably will break through our defenses. So our next line of defense, and this is something that we need to consider, is how quickly can we detect them and how quickly can we respond? The goal of many organizations is to put up defenses and keep the adversaries out. That has proven over the years to fail. If you look at the number of breaches that we see on an annual basis, probably on a daily basis, our defenses are only serving against the low-hanging fruit and not against the advanced adversaries or the attackers that want to get in. So what's our next line of defense? And that's the question that every CIO and CISO should ask themselves. If we can't completely defend against an attacker getting in, what can we do? Well, we need to have tools in place that we can detect when an attacker's in our environment, when there's malicious behavior in our environment, and we have to have a process and people in place to respond to those activities. It's a good thing that we have the detection capability, but if we don't have a process in place and we don't have the people to respond to it, we still will lose in this battle. So our goal in winning should be redefined as not keeping the adversaries out, rather making sure that they can't achieve their objectives. Anyone who attacks us has an objective. Anyone who tries to get into our network has an objective, and we need to understand that. And if we can make sure that they cannot achieve their objective, we've won.
So this is a lot of companies spend their time on identifying advanced persistent threats. A lot of time they spend time on building up the walls. What would we call this as a practice, doing this, identifying people once they get in and what their intent is, and then, addressing it from that point. What do we call that as a practice?
I would call it having a defensible architecture and having a more defensible environment. I think that we need to look at defensibility and not prevention. As I said, prevention inevitably will fail because you can't prevent everything. There will be a patch that will be missed. There'll be a system that will be configured incorrectly. There'll be a system that you're unaware of that will be your Achilles heel, and an attacker will find their way in.
You know, I so often hear that the defense is what you called perimeter or protection. It's almost like this is a new vocation, a way of thinking about it a little differently. And, you know, I think it's something a little bit more unique than that.
And I think that we need to reassess the way that we're thinking about the problem. So I think it's about getting to a point where we're not thinking about setting up a good, strong perimeter. Strong perimeter is important. I'm not going to discount that. Having a strong perimeter is crucial to defending our environment, but it's not the end-all, be-all. And the perimeter is extended. Where is your perimeter today? Is it at your internet egress and ingress points, or is it on the handheld devices that are in and out of your network? So the perimeter has changed. We need to change the way that we think about protecting our environment because of these different changes. Is your cloud environment considered part of your perimeter? Is it inside your perimeter, outside your perimeter? How do you defend that? And changing the way that you look at the problem will help you create a more defensible architecture around it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm thinking about this in terms of, because I talk to a lot of people in cybersecurity, and it's almost like you hear this advanced persistent threats is outside the organization, cyber hunting. But identifying, I guess this would be called incident response by most people, but you're looking at it from an even different point of view as to, you know, probably going to have it a big network like you're used to, attackers, people infiltrating all the time. So it's more of an idea of try to identify them, what they're doing as they get in, almost like a different practice.
I think that it's a practice that we need to adopt, that we need to think about it. What's the objective of an adversary? And many adversaries have different objectives. Having an understanding that's what they're doing. They have an objective. They have a reason to do whatever they're doing. Some of them have an objective of just wreaking havoc. Some of them have more lucrative objectives, like stealing intellectual property, getting credit card numbers, or getting bank account. But every adversary that's out there, every attacker, everyone in the threat landscape has an objective that they're trying to achieve. And keeping that in mind when we think about how do we defend against those adversaries is important in order to make it a better and more defensible environment.
So if I had to say, is there, you know, attackers have an objective. Is there a certain group of objective hackers, attackers, that are not really a problem, that we don't have to worry about, so we only focus on the ones that we do?
Wouldn't that be nice?
I'm just wondering if there's a prioritization here in some way that says, you know, people who have one objective that we've identified are a priority, but other ones, not so.
I think that won't yield the results that we're looking for. I wouldn't think about it in terms of attacker objectives. Rather, I want to think about it from what can I defend? I can only control what I can control, what's in my network. And I need to consider all the attack avenues that are possible or anything that I can defend. And I'll never get 100% of the attack avenues. It's impossible to get that. But understanding my environment, the better I understand my environment, the better I understand the chinks in the armor, if you will, or the vulnerabilities that I'm exposed to. And having good processes in place to identify that and to continuously test my defenses to make sure that they are providing me with the best capabilities or the best ability to detect and respond is something that, that we need to do more holistically. Another thing that we consider is leveraging attack or penetration testing teams that can actually simulate attackers and give us a write-up of, okay, here's the attacker group that we simulated in your environment. This is the outcome. So if you were targeted by this attacker group, this is what you can expect. That's very useful for an organization to understand, okay, these attack groups will attack us this way. Other thing is finding ways to automate that, not just relying on an annual pen test, rather finding tools. And there are some new, really innovative tools out
there. Can you give us some examples of tools that you would recommend? This is, I think this would be interesting for people to hear.
There are two tools that I've seen that are very, very effective in detecting the efficacy of security controls. One tool is called Safe Breach, and the other tool is called Verodin. Two tools that I've seen in action where they simulate the attack but don't actually create a compromise in your environment. Both of them have similar capabilities. They're very innovative tools, and the objective of those tools is to detect or find ways to get through your defenses. So if you have controls in place, your defenses are in place, this will simulate an attack. And one of those tools, don't recall which one, will actually tell you what exact attack it's simulating. So say that you want to see how susceptible your environment is to WannaCry. They can simulate a WannaCry attack against your environment without impacting any system. Which, in my mind, if you can get such a report and say, okay, this is how we stand up against a ransomware attack in our environment, this is where we're weak and this is where we have good defenses, that gives you a good metric to show your board of directors or your leadership and say, here's where we need to invest. Here is my proof that I need to invest in these different defenses to defend against ransomware. Just as a for instance, these tools have those capabilities, and this is something I think that we should do more regularly in our environments. Now, I don't want it to come off as if I'm promoting either one of those tools. Those are tools that I was impressed with their capabilities, and they have a capability that I think is valuable to our organizations.
Yeah, it's always good to know some recommendations of people that are just neutral and say, hey, I've just tried these, and this was effective to do what I'm trying to do. But kind of in wrapping up here, is there anything you'd like to get out to our listener base that would help you or benefit things you're trying to move forward?
I think that it's about time to reassess the way that we do security operations and the way that we staff security operations. One thing that I wanted to touch on is there's a mindset of having a tiering model within security operations. You have your tier one, tier two, and so on. And I think that that mindset goes back to the days of our security operations being an extension of the help desk. And I think we need to change our dynamic in that regard. We need to grow people within our organizations. There is a shortage of cybersecurity professionals. How do we grow people in our organizations to become the cybersecurity professionals that we're lacking? And how do we create an environment in the SOC, the security operations, where it's not a tier, rather it's a collaborative team. And the team is always more than the sum of its parts. And have that investment in our people to grow their capability and make them more effective. And what we discussed earlier, the ability to detect and respond more expeditiously, more accurately, and more consistently.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today, Jason. It's definitely been a pleasure. And enjoy the rest of your evening there on the East Coast. So you're about almost at 7 o'clock. So.
Chris, thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed the conversation and getting the message out about defensible cybersecurity.
All right. Have a good evening. Bye.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved.
Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.